Hello and welcome to, what is this, 10HP? Episode number 21? Yeah, 21. It is. The show that follows our game club as we play through random games from the past few years. And this is supposed to be the 22nd month, but no, this is supposed to be our 22nd episode, but we skipped an episode. And this is our analog gaming episode. Yes. We did play a game. We played a board game. Pathfinder Adventure card game.
And that board game requires everyone to be together and sit down and play a game.
Right.
So we used that.
So we used the podcast recording time to do that.
Yeah.
And with the intention of recording the podcast after we played. And then we just played and played and played until everyone went home and we didn't record a podcast.
Weren't you supposed to record a podcast that simply said, we don't have an episode this month?
Well, yeah. I tweeted it, but yeah, I should have. I don't know. Our fan is going to be disappointed.
Singular? Plural? Did I hear singular?
Okay, so Pathfinder Adventure Card Game. What is it? Gee, you describe it because it's yours.
It's a deck-building game, basically. It's kind of a, I'd say it's a mishmash between like Dominion and D&D. Everyone takes a character class of, you know, like fighter, druid, cleric, rogue. And they construct a deck of, you know, special ability, special ally, special items, weapons, armor, spells, whatever, what have you. And they use that deck to play through an adventure.
Well, I think it is like Dominion, but I think the distinction between a deck building, like constructible card game, is you don't have all the cards available to you. And you don't really construct your deck in advance. I mean, you do kind of.
You have some.
You have a few options.
Yeah. But it's really about what cards are available to you and when. Because
like loot. I mean, loot
well,
or cards.
Well, like, no. You know, if you're playing a collectible card game, you have whatever you own. Like, if you buy every card available, you have every card available as your options to make the deck. But in Pathfinder, you only have the cards that you have earned by playing the game. There's lots of cards available in, you know, the set that you could eventually have. But you have to go out and adventure and play the game and collect these cards for them to become options to you.
Yeah, it should be said that it's a cooperative game and you don't play it against other people.
True. That's one of the things that really drew me to it, because I think a lot of times when we play competitive games, we kind of get used to each other's like strategies. We know like this one, this player does that. You know, Ricky is always the one who betrays us. And, you know, Anthony's a backstabber. He breaks alliances, things like that. Scott will say everyone's allying against him, someone else is a traitor. But you know, we've played a lot of games together where we kind of have these expectations of how people play.
Right. Well, I think this game appealed to me because I miss playing role playing games, pen and paper, and you know. Getting to build the character and whatnot, and it's kind of this hybrid between board game and RPG.
Just one.
Let's go around the table really quick. What did you think? How many games Pathfinder have you played now? How much time? And what do you think of the game?
No, I've played as many games as you, which is what, like 5.5.
Okay, yeah. Seems about right.
Yeah, and I mean when
we've played two nights. And we played
that tutorial one, two-player one.
Right, we played. Okay,
that's the half game I was talking about. But no, I mean, I like you, right? It's like I find this game to be a role-playing game, you know, pen and paper role-playing game. You know, you have your character sheet, and you go on adventures, and you know, you roll dice to resolve conflict and actions. What are they called? Checks or
encounters.
And the deck building aspect, you know, we talked about this offline. Like, I don't consider it a deck building game. I actually consider this game to be its own kind of card game. You know, you construct. There's very limited the deck construction you have control over. You know, at the start, in the middle of the game, you know, like recharging is like the only way you can kind of build your deck. It's not like Dominion. It's not like Star Realms Ascension.
Right. Yeah. Other deck building games. Once you go through the deck, you basically reshuffle and redeal out your hands.
Yeah,
so
like,
you're right.
I mean, yeah, like the,
right, you're constantly deleting and adding
cards.
Yeah,
like so. Let's talk about Dominion, right? Star Realms. That's more fresh in my mind. Fresher in my mind. You start with 10 cards. Everyone starts with the same hand, which is basically resources of purchased cards, and everyone has cards they can purchase from the pool, the center, and you're building your deck and strategy with those resources, and your deck, you know, changes drastically by the end of the game. With Pathfinder, you have the starting deck, and though you acquire, cards later during the course of a single adventure, you know, it's really hard. It's really hard to, like, you know, actually make use of those cards. They're not changing your deck or your strategy. It's just like, well, you get one or two cards, you know, throughout the game. At the end of the game, you know, you have the option of including those cards into your deck, mm-hmm. but they also kick out cards.
Yeah, your deck. I think that's part of the reason why they didn't call it like a deck building. It's adventure card game.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. This game is I see it as its own class, and it's not a bad thing. I like it.
Okay.
Also, I mean, one additional difference is that the deck is your hit points, and so it makes it so you don't really want to go through it, you know, all that fast.
Right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The gameplay is, I mean, different too, so that's cool.
And the deck building is different than like Magic, because there's nothing that happens offline. Right? When the game's over, you construct your deck for the next time, and you can't do anything in between. It's frozen.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Your deck is your character, along with their character sheet of. You know, that tells you what cards you can have in your deck.
So, Paul, you've played...
I've played three games.
Three games, okay.
Yeah, so I missed the last session.
Okay.
And I think overall I like it. The first time I played, I thought it was kind of boring just because I played the character that, like, was an archer or something, and I just basically sat at my place and just helped everybody, and I didn't really do very much.
Mm-hmm.
And yet
you said you've done a lot by helping people. You're like,
it was always the same action. It's like, Okay. Oh, yes, I can recharge another card and give someone a plus modifier.
Yeah,
and when
you like
reduce it to that, it doesn't seem very fun.
Right.
I mean, but, I mean, later I got to do, I mean, more things on my own, and that was a little more fun. I will say that the visuals aren't great in this game. Like, one of the things I like about, you know, Warhammer Quest or whatever is, like, you have a map of the dungeon, and you have all these monsters laid out and everything. And I just don't think there's any visuals at all in this game.
Pause.
Anyway, I was saying, there are some audio sounds, though, for the game. We just had a few. So the visuals just aren't that great. But I think the game and its cooperative aspect and kind of the working together and the strategy that you have to combine, it's kind of one of those committee games where everyone's, you know, talking to each other and they're like, you know, well, I'll give you this modifier and then I'll help you out in the next one. And that kind of makes it fun.
Yeah. Can we jump back to me, please?
Okay.
No, that's the other thing about Dominion, right? Those other games is that they're not really... Dominion's not really interactive. You're playing a single-player game, and you're just waiting for your turn to come around again to do stuff. And
right.
There's very little interaction you do with the other players. Star Realms is a little different because you're actually fighting the other person, so there's a lot more interaction, but it's not cooperative. And in this game, it's like Paul says, you know, everyone's interacting with each other, and even when you're not using powers... on your character sheets, you're bargaining too. You're right. Like, hey, help me out with this one, and I'll get this loot, and I'll give you this other loot later.
Well, I think it's interesting what Paul said about like feeling like he's always doing the same action, because I felt the same way as the cleric. You know, it's like my job is to keep blessings in my hand and healing people and making, you know, I basically oscillate between three different things. Either I'm trying to rebuild my hand so that I have things to help people with, I'm using things to help people, or I'm going to, you know, help other people get their cards. And those are I rarely actually do the fighting aspect, but I had a fixed role and I actually liked that because it was like, that was my job in the party. I didn't find that limiting in my experience. And I thought it was interesting that you did. Did you get over that or did you find other things to do?
I think, I got over it and I found other things to do. I mean, I was just by myself in my own territory and kind of tackling the monsters, you know, which is more fun than just kind of giving people cards.
Yeah, because on your turn, you're doing stuff and on other people's turn, you're helping them out.
Yeah, I really do compare this game to Warhammer Quest because we played a lot of that and we had a lot of fun back in the days. And one thing I don't like about it is that we're all kind of in separate areas, kind of fighting our own monsters. And, you know, unless you're me, where I can give you, you know, I shouldn't say that. I have a mechanic where I could give people bonuses. And other people can actually do that too, right, with the blessings.
Right.
Even though you're not in the same territory. But that's about that's about the extent of like helping other people. There really isn't too much interaction other than that, especially the way we played, where we all went to like different zones.
I think we had a couple of cases where people paired up to tackle areas.
Yeah.
And then we still haven't gone the route that, you know, some, I'm not sure if some recommend or not, where it's like a big chunk of the party plows through one whole location, closes it out completely, and then moves on to the next one. But then there's also some characters, like Dan's character, that actually gets bonuses if they're solo.
Yeah. Right, and I think that's kind of an issue that we've had. Like, Anthony and I stick together fairly often because Anthony's character benefits from being in the same location as somebody else, and I benefit from being near somebody to heal them. So it works out. But like Dan, you know, he just plows through a location and ignores the combat he doesn't want to do.
The rogue is really just a solo class, and really benefits from being solo, where you actually get additional modifiers to that you can use when you're solo. So there's really no benefit, and you can, and you're in no danger ever, really, as a rogue. Which maybe one of the critiques is that I never felt in danger. You play the rogue, and you never die, because any time you have an encounter that may be remotely difficult, where there is a chance of dying, you can evade it.
You're just a wuss. That's what it is. Yeah. You're taking a risk. Yeah. That's why you never die.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a thing that it's completely controlled, where it's one of the things that I kind of miss about the pen and paper RPG is that there was, you know, there was no, like, there was no mechanism that completely excluded you from danger. Which, with like playing the rogue, that's one of the things, is you're completely excluded really from taking any damage.
But this is the thing about the Pathfinder game, is that even though you're excluding yourself from danger, you're eating up a turn, and the adventurer only has a fixed number of turns to complete.
You never had that one location where it actually coincided in that kind of that circle or
so that, so that's the thing, is you lose a turn for the entire party by just evading.
But I've never really had that really be an issue. I mean, usually just plow through the locations really
we
fast.
We haven't run into the threat
of
running out of turns.
The other option
is
just defeating the monster instead of reshuffling it, right?
Yeah.
So, you don't really lose a turn. I mean, you do kind of lose like half a turn.
If you choose to evade.
Yeah.
You've done nothing. But
I thought that one gets reshuffled, though.
It does get reshuffled.
Yeah, so it either would have been dead or it gets recycled. But either way,
his turn ends.
Blessing deck counts down the number of turns.
My point is that he's gone through a card in the deck.
You go through a card, and then you just explore the next thing. And so if you're going to do it, it really doesn't, for the most part, I didn't find it really detrimental to evade the monsters, typically.
For Paul, when you shuffle the card, it could wind up on top again. So
that's what I'm saying. Use like a half a turn, because like it could end up above the.
But if he doesn't take another action that turn, he has to spend resources to take another action. Otherwise, he's just not.
He's just delayed a turn. He just ate up a turn if it shuffles
for the team.
Yeah.
It shuffled the deck.
Right, no, but then the blessings deck is counting down our turns.
I understand
turns.
That.
Oh, yeah,
so
yeah.
He's wasted one whole turn.
No, he's
turn
only
of
wasted.
Blessing.
Well,
because he
doesn't
get to go again.
If the thing got reshuffled on top of the monster or like the target guy that you're looking for, then you're right. It's wasted turn. But if it gets reshuffled below, then it's not.
Yeah. I know.
And that's why it's
it doesn't matter. It's like basically we used one turn on the blessings deck. And then he didn't complete an exploration. He didn't gain or remove anything. So basically, he didn't have to spend
resources. You understand what I'm saying.
I understand exactly what you're saying.
No, I'm following you now.
It's really the exploration aspect of it, where you actually see what's in the deck. And so the thing is, with a Bane, which is, you know, the ones you have to defeat, if you evade it, you just hope that it ends up lower. And for the most part, you know, you don't get the exact same one.
Yeah, the chances are you've moved it off the top and you're going to encounter something new.
And then you can, the next turn, it's almost exactly the same. And so... Whereas if you did the next exploration. So because there's typically going to be something different there. I mean, the only time where you truly waste a turn is if you encountered the same thing and would have to evade again.
Mm-hmm. And here's the thing. You want to try to protect yourself, be a wuss, right? If we were really tight on turns, we would peer pressure you into taking that.
And I think you did in one of the games take a lot of damage.
Yes.
Yeah.
There was
No. He took a lot of damage just because he failed miserably at the check he was supposed to
pass.
Yeah,
there was one game where I rolled a lots of ones and twos. But there's definitely the pressure of, you know, what you do. But I think one of the things is that it never really feels dangerous.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Is the reason that that this is that the rogue never dies is that you don't have enough pressure to take risks. The game isn't hard enough that. And is that only because we're in Adventure 1 of 6?
Yes, that is true. That is, I've been kind of researching a little bit. So basically Adventures 1 and 2 kind of ramp up slowly is what I heard. When you get to Adventure 3, you start removing lower level cards.
Ah, okay.
This podcast is not concerned with spoilers.
Unless you said we've never had any problems with these
characters. Actually came pretty close to death on a few characters.
But didn't, right?
I got within two or three cards.
No, the closest we've ever been to death is when we play two-player.
Mm-hmm. That one, but in our current situation, you don't want to take that, because, you're going to... Yeah. If you take two damage, you're going to die.
Yeah, we usually have a better awareness of how close people are, and then we'll limit their risks and say... Okay, go find Chris, have him heal you up a bit.
How does that make you feel when you complete an adventure? Because, when I played Warhammer Quest, you would die at least in half of the adventures. At least starting out. And it really made it so that when you got through, it felt pretty good.
Yeah.
This one, these adventures, they're not difficult because I think we've gotten really lucky.
Oh, yes. Oh, my God.
We've gotten really lucky.
But I don't think we can get lucky games in a row.
Yeah.
No. And that last one we had where it's, find allies.
I'm sorry. We didn't... cycled one whole cycle around the table when we found the boss.
Well, that was one game, but we had four other games, and all of them were the same level of easiness, I would say. Okay. It felt like I was playing easy on a role-playing game. It's in the beginning when I got to pick, I picked easy.
So at the same time, right, when I complete an adventure, I don't think the rewards are that great either. So I just feel like my character hasn't grown. But, give it time. Maybe I'll get a kick.
Something's grown.
Yeah, exactly. I found more for Chris. I got him some sweet magic half plate or something.
Yeah, that's nice armor. I'm the only person that can wear heavy armor. So yeah, I think that I'm hoping that it will get harder as time goes on and as we get to the later adventures, and that these are just kind of introductory things. I don't think that the Warhammer Quest scaling is probably the best, where it's like brutal up front and gets ridiculously easy at the end.
It gets brutal again later. But you're right. I mean, there's like this middle period where you're almost unstoppable.
But you have to get to that point, which is
a trial in itself.
So, G, you've played.
I played. I was one
five
of
and five league. Games. We played five and a half, Anthony. We're the leaders.
Well, have you played more?
No, I was reading rules while Anthony and Chris played and kind of just guiding him through it. Mm-hmm. But I did, watch a couple tutorial videos and seeing how folks played. I played over at the Holders at that mini.
Oh, you did?
Oh, so you're at seven games?
Yes. I'm ahead of the curve. So,
but your character is the tail in now because
I reset my character at least two times now.
Okay.
Chris actually
Why did you reset it?
My first character was a wizard. He had a ton of spells, which is great, but the problem was he had no blessings, and the blessings are great because they allow you to explore
again
yep, location yep. or provide benefits or buffs for other mm-hmm. folks. And so I always felt selfish. It's like someone like, can someone buff me? It's like, nope, can't. Can I go explore? If I failed my first action, and I explored once or I fought a monster, I was like, okay, done. It's like I did one thing. I could do it really well, but I can only do one thing.
Yeah, it was in that game, it was like you were through like half a deck and everyone else had gone through a full deck or two.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, so what is that like a criticism of the game? Did you switch away from the wizard?
I switched from a wizard to a sorcerer who has less spells but
more blessings.
I see.
So just to quickly go through... How many blessings does your character have?
He has four or five. It's four or five, and then three allies. And so the allies...
Some of them, yeah.
So all the allies that I've used allow you to explore again also. So it really gives you eight chances for exploring.
Okay.
In addition to, which is essentially an extra turn each time.
Yeah, but basically at the cost of life.
Right. Well, I have six blessings.
Well, you're a cleric.
But I also have healing spells, which allow me to bring those blessings back into my hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really nice.
Yeah.
So I'm the bard. And the thing about magic, right, is that, my bard character, his spells help others. So I'm, doing interactive stuff on other people's turns, too. Not just because of my own power, which helps people at the location, but the spells I had, you know, give buffs to other players. But what I've done is I've, you know, moved away from those spells and built him to be more selfish now. So he can evade and pop one monster because he couldn't fight worth anything before.
So how many blessings did you have?
I think I started with 5.
Okay.
I play a dwarven ranger who likes tea. Boo.
Well, you have options once we get the new class decks in.
He has 5 blessings and 1 ally, so he's got like 6.
Okay, and
I think I'm 4 and 4.
I think that 4 is above average.
I think it's about average because if you play like the paladin, then you have 7 blessings or something, or 6 blessings and allies.
But 4-4 is actually better than my 5-1, I would say.
Or
I
mean, was it 4-3?
It's doing, but the thing is that there was nobody below 4. Right,
except for my prior wizard, which was 0.
Right, you had 0 blessings.
Yeah, wow. That's why I said
which is a significant hindrance.
It is. It's a huge hindrance.
But maybe it's like you just must be able to like demolish stuff. I mean, with
I have 8 spells.
You just never get to it though.
Yeah, that's true.
So is that contributing factor to the easiness of the game? Is that we can all help each other through their challenges? Like whenever you run into a difficult situation. Pretty much guarantee somebody's got a blessing to help you out.
I think also the other benefit is we got 2 healers between Anthony and Chris. You know, the bard has a heal spell, and Chris has a healing spell and a healing ability too. And so, I mean, we generally can say, okay, let's slow it down, go get healed up by Chris. I mean,
I didn't even see that we ever really slowed it down. I mean, every once in a while, there's a random turn where someone would say, okay, I need a heal. But for the most part, there's so many blessings that every time there was a big fight that had to go on, I mean, you could expect 3 to 4 extra dice, and you had to roll significantly below the average.
Yeah. Which Dan has done.
Which I have done. But even then, I don't actually think we've lost any big battles in all 5 games that we've played.
I think it's because we're also, you know, the committee think tank going on here with each turn. When we see something big, we all do the freaking math. Okay, I need the dice roll 3.75 average, so we need to roll this much stuff, so you need this many blessings.
Well, do you think the game would be slightly better if they put like a slight mechanic in there where you wanted to be selfish and not always help everybody out? Well, you know, kind of like
that mechanic does exist.
Oh, what is it?
No, it's just like that's why we sometimes bargain with other player, like, oh, I want you to get this item for me, so. Yeah, I'll throw the blessings at you.
But that doesn't. That's not selfish. That's more cooperative. I mean, whoever showed up. I mean, it was like for like the half plate or something. It was like, hey, I don't need this, but if anyone else needs this, then hey, go ahead and buff my roll.
I don't know. Maybe what happens if there comes an item? You know, like I don't know. Who uses like Paul and Dan both use bows. I suppose Anthony's character could use bows as well. What happens if there's a really awesome bow? And Anthony finds it. And then, you know, Dan and Paul are like, I would really like that. Or who discovered it first?
I mean, he actually had a bow come up, I think.
I think, yeah, we got 2 magic weapons for Paul.
Yeah. And I think it was Dan couldn't even use it.
It was the proficiency issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I haven't, there hasn't been too much stuff that could have gone to multiple people. But I mean, there should be some kind of points mechanic or something. Like, if you do the most whatever or, you know, just something to make it so that you have some slight incentive to do things by yourself or something like that, and that you get an extra reward at the end or whatever it is that, you know.
Or you have, like,
make the game better.
A secret quest.
Oh, yeah, that could work, too.
Where you have to do some certain thing to get it done, and then you get a reward at the end if you complete it. And so, I mean, so where you have an instance where you may or may not, so you can complete the quest or help someone, you know, you may be more inclined to complete the quest, and that may be rewarded to you even if you don't finish main quest.
So I cause say a total party kill. World of Warcraft this title. Raid rules.
Well, so this game has permadeath.
I mean, even if... If
you draw out your deck, you die, and that's it.
And you're just dead.
And you start over.
Okay. Yeah. And all your equipment is gone?
Everything's gone.
Okay.
Can't you get looted?
I don't know. No.
No one's ever died
because it hasn't been that hard. But I think that if you died because your guy was being selfish trying to get his personal quest done, I mean, this kind of falls into the rogue stealing from his party in an RPG territory. I just don't know. I don't know how that would make me feel if there was a side quest where people wanted to be selfish and not contribute to the party all the time. I mean, in Warhammer Quest, they didn't have anything like that.
It didn't, but I
the gold.
Well, yes, there was
last
gold.
Kill gold.
No, it's the same kind of thing. Like, do you spend your resources to save another person? That's different than whether or not you.
Well, in Warhammer Quest, I mean, you guys always had the what was it, Touch of Life or whatever that spell was that saved people at the very edge of death.
Mm-hmm. It was just healing, the wizard healing.
Yeah, yeah. And so in this game, you don't have that. I mean, you die, you're dead. There is no like last minute intervention, at least not from any item or spell or action that I can see so far. Yeah.
So you're saying that it has like even bigger like drop off if you go over the cliff of losing, but like you never get there. So,
but that's one.
Well,
of the...
and also it's one of the things that you can really just kind of pause yourself at any time. There's no, like in an RPG, like a pen and paper RPG. If you don't kill the dragon, you're dead.
Yeah.
If you fail and you lose 3 hit points, guess what? You don't have to explore again.
That's right.
And there's no, yeah. So there's not the constant threat where you have an encounter and that encounter is bad. You just don't have to go to it again, which totally kind of
makes
decouples.
It so you can manage the game.
I
no one has to die unless they get like a really bad roll all at once.
Well, yeah. I will say this though. One of the things that we haven't really explored really, but we did on that second adventure, which is the concept of finishing the quest or trying to get gear.
Yeah, that was going to be my example of a selfish action, like because
you're right. We all were selfish. We were like, hell no, we're not going to close this location. We're going to keep on.
Yeah,
that did come up more the second play session than the first.
Well, that was the whole point of that one.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think that was. And but the thing is, and the threat was actually failing the adventure because
we
lose
got down
turns.
To nine.
Yeah,
nine
but
or
in the
cards.
End, I mean, we still got lucky and got through things.
To describe
quickly.
The mechanics a little bit, in case people aren't clear, is that when you're going adventuring through a location, the object of that location is to find the uber villain, the henchman, whatever that's in that location. And if you get there and you kill him, then you can close the location, discard all the cards, and move on to the next location.
Which includes all the
which
good
includes
stuff,
everything you
good
might not have
bad.
Found yet, which mm-hmm. might be loot, and it might be something that you want. So you have the option of not closing it and continuing on, but then it takes a lot longer to close that location because you have to encounter every card in the deck and get down to it. Then you can try to close it again. So the selfishness that we're describing is not closing it for
when
the betterment
you have
the of the mission.
To close it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And instead pursuing the additional
and
equipment.
Also, the game doesn't penalize you for failing an adventure. Basically, you fail an adventure, you fail the adventure. You don't get the benefit of at the end of an adventure.
As long as you don't die. So you can fail and not die and nothing happens.
Nothing happens.
Yeah, but that's not... I mean, for me, that's not a goal to play the
adventure. Oh, no. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying, you know...
Another way to save your bacon.
Well, yeah. I mean, if you don't have to go, like, you know, all out and run the risk of death. I mean, if you fail a mission, you fail a mission. And
you're right. If we all risk dying, we can all run to the one closed location and just camp out and burn out the rest of our
turns. I don't
know
if you can burn your turns. I was just thinking about that. Like, I don't think you can just spend it at a closed location doing nothing. You'd have to find something to do.
No, isn't an exploration an optional step?
Yeah, I don't think
it's
required.
No,
yeah.
you can burn out your clock, I suppose.
I'll have to look that up. That's
the only action you...
Just sitting there drawing
the only
card,
thing
you might as well just surrender.
Reset your hand. Resetting your hand is the only required option or action.
Well, not everyone else is just drawing a card.
Yeah, so, I mean, you just move... to a location.
But anyway, I mean, Warhammer Quest, every once in a while, the dragon does come and it threatens your whole party, and that just is like a shared experience of group, you know, possible death that I don't think is in this game, and I wish it was.
Yeah. Okay. I think, just the ever-present danger mm-hmm. of an encounter is every turn it disappears. So whatever the danger was you encountered last turn mm-hmm. is not there the next turn. And, I mean, it could be, but you don't have to, you know, it's like, oh, open this door, I don't like that, and shut it.
Yep.
Well, eventually you'll get boiled down to that, right? If you're in a deck with a henchman. But well, I guess you could always move away.
You can move away and have someone else deal with it, right? You open the door, you're like, oh, so that is not what I wanted to do. And you just go and go somewhere else. And we've even done that on occasions where I think I encountered something that I couldn't handle. And so I just moved away. And then I think Paul came in or somebody else came in and then took care of it. But there's no danger that lasts longer than a turn.
I'd be curious, though, to just thinking out loud in terms of like where we're going in the future adventures with our characters. Because as far as I know, Dan and I are our main offensive. We have Paul's offensive as well, but I wonder if he's offensive support. I don't know. I guess you could build it either way. I can build all
I think offense. I'm actually mostly support, and I do some offense. But
yeah, and then Chris and Anthony are definitely support. So I'm wondering if we have enough like oomph for later on. I'm just thinking out loud.
I think, the rogue gets extremely powerful once you get a good item.
And weapon proficiency, too?
Weapon proficiency. I think at the next one, you get weapon proficiency also for the rogue, or you can. That's an option. And so you get a D12 plus whatever bonus you have plus...
You have to recharge
by yourself, you have to recharge a card, which is not big. And then you can show a card, and so you end up with, a possibility of maybe 30 for your rolls with the rogue on any combat. That's, So, he gets pretty dangerous pretty quick. And then if it's not something you can do, you can always evade.
Fair enough.
Okay, so we're almost around. Now, Dan, you can say whether or not you like the game.
Oh, I basically said everything I was thinking about it, but... Yeah, that was... I like the game. It's fun. It's a throwback to the pen and paper. I just miss the... I think kind of what Paul said. I miss the party element of the pen and paper, which I don't think you get as much with Pathfinder.
Well, it's definitely its own game, right? It's a card game. It's not... so they've adapted certain mechanics as best they can.
A card game with role-playing elements.
Right. I don't know you'll ever get that true... RPG, pen and paper RPG experience.
But I did like in our last game, us adding minis. I should have remembered to bring them. It was nice to just have the physical representation.
I'm surprised that Paizo has not released an official set of minis for the characters.
I have a whole bunch of Pathfinder minis from the Bones Kickstarter.
Huh.
Yeah. I just thought it was nice.
Goblins, and then there's like a Pathfinder hero set, and then... I don't remember.
But
15 of them.
Miniatures represent your characters, but I don't see you representing monsters.
No, not monsters. No. Definitely characters.
They only last one turn, as you said.
Yeah.
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 So I wrote down, and I forgot why, Crossfire versus deck recycling. What were we talking about? I wanted to find out how other games do it in this genre. When
you're talking about Shadowrun,
Dominion,
yeah.
Dominion. When you finish your deck, Star Realm. When you finish your deck, you recycle. You kind of go through. You discard cards as you're playing. You get specific cards that have the power to get rid of cards, or you. I don't know if you can just.
You can't get rid of cards in Star Dominion. Realms. Oh, sorry, in Dominion.
But anyway, the point is that you thin out your deck in order to make it more efficient and more tuned to what you want to be, in. This game, in Pathfinder, you build your deck up front, and you never go through it completely because that means you're dead. And you only thin it out and make it what you want to be at the start of the game.
Or at the end.
At the end.
Between adventures.
Between adventures. So is Crossfire the type of game where your deck is your hit points?
No, it's more of a Dominion. It's more of a Dominion type game, except it's a party-based game. Where you start with a set number of cards, and everyone starts with the same starter deck.
Mm-hmm.
Not the same starter deck, but you start with the same 7 cards, dependent upon your class. And there's 4 classes, and there's only 4 different cards. So there's a weapon card.
Oh, right, and they're color-coded.
There's a data card, sort of like the jack, like jacked in, or, for your decker. So you have your street samurai, your decker, then you have your mage, and your... face character, so it's like negotiation or something, right? So you have, and each of those represent a different type of damage, and so, but everyone starts with 7, where they start with 4 of their card, and then 1 of each of the other cards, and so everyone starts like that, and then you acquire cards as you play,
right? And every time, every game, you start with the same base. You don't like build up a repertoire of different cards.
Supposedly, there's some karma rewards that. As you level in the game, you have karma that continues. And I think you can modify your deck maybe one or two cards, but that's the extent. That's what I read.
So it sounds like you're building your deck as you're playing.
That's yeah, like you are. Part of the game you are. And then you have like a black market where you can buy cards. And so as you defeat the enemies, then you get the money, and then you can buy cards. And so some things can make it cheaper and stuff to buy cards. And then when you buy the cards, you bring them directly into your deck. But the one thing is you can only draw cards if you're at three cards or below. And then you can only draw two cards. And so you run into deck scarcity issues a lot where if you have one card, you draw two cards. You only have three cards maximum that you can play unless you buy additional cards. And so you don't ever like draw up to your full hand.
Right.
Really, the most you really ever have is five, and that's if you didn't use tons. But it's really, you have a lot of matching that goes on between the different types of damage that things require to take it. And so there has to be tons of communication between everyone. And I didn't have anyone to play with, so I played four characters by myself. And by yourself, basically it just becomes a matching game.
Right.
And so you know, and then, but your characters are always about to die in that game. And most of the time, especially if you don't have a knowledge of every single card and can plan the next three moves in a row, then basically the comments is that you die a lot, which is... And there, the death isn't permadeath. You just do it again. So your karma just...
Yeah, dock wagon, man.
Yeah, right. Dock wagon. It always picks you up. But yeah, so it's kind of a... It's definitely a different mechanic, and then just the karma rewards you get change certain things. And
I mean, maybe I'm just with Anthony in this camp, but I just think the mechanics are a lot different than Pathfinder. I mean, I just don't see the comparison with Dominion or Star Realms, mm-hmm. where the games are all about building your deck.
I don't
every single yeah. game, and yeah. Pathfinder is just different.
No, I agree with that. And that's why I was wondering about Crossfire, because Crossfire is all often described as like the Shadowrun Pathfinder game. Okay. And
it's more like a cooperative Star Realms.
Okay.
Where you're defeating enemies and you go through rounds. And so then you just kind of put the enemy cards up, but everyone's on the same team. And so a lot of times you'll take damage in order to kill someone else's enemy. And so you're like, well, I can take damage this turn but I have the only thing that can kill this guy in order to get the next damage phase. Because you kill enemies by going through their multiple phases of damage. And mm-hmm. so at each phase, they require a different thing. And so if you're the mage and it requires two magic damage, in order to progress, and you only have one card, you know that. And so you may have to take damage yourself in order to help someone else out.
So it sounds like a matching game, as you said earlier.
Yeah, it is. It is, you know, you're matching, you know, your abilities with all the enemies that are present. And so you have to make the best decisions, which a lot of times mean that you're going to get hurt rather than trying to eliminate. Even if you could eliminate your enemy and not take any damage that turn, it may be best to try and eliminate someone else.
So that would Crossfire doesn't sound like, I mean, the role-playing aspect sounds like, you know, just between adventures, your karma rewards, if you...
Well, what you do with the karma is you buy perks for the game, which I don't know what they do. Maybe hand size, maybe, I don't know.
There's more starting money. I mean, there's...
So the game itself is basically dealing with these enemies, and then the rewards you get, you build your deck between enemies.
And then they have other elements, too, where they have, like, a random effect that occurs every single round when it restarts, and it gets progressively more difficult. So it's like the Crossfire card, and then if you've been through too many rounds, then they have additional effects that occur after, you know, you pull a card and it will say if you're on Crossfire level 4+, then this additional bad thing happens.
Sounds like, you know, it was just events thrown in there to mix things up.
And then you have, like, depending on the run that you're doing, you have different types of things that you're required to do. There's like an extraction mission, and so they may have like three phases or seven phases or two phases, and depends on the type of run, you have to do different things in order to beat it. And then if you complete it, you get rewards at the end. And then if you withdraw, you can get like one karma, but that can be difficult also.
So one of the interesting things about Pathfinder in terms of the campaign is that you keep the cards separated from the... They like eat up resources from the game. And you keep them separate for when you come back to the character. What did you keep in the box of Descent? Because I'm trying to remember, trying to compare it to the Descent campaign. And each character had their own little box.
Yeah.
And you put stuff inside it. But what did you keep inside it? I don't remember. Was it dice?
No. It was Descent. You had weapons and armor, right?
Were those cards?
I'm going to say yes. I think that's what
yeah. Cause you, yeah, they're cards because you stick them underneath your character because you have also...
yeah, you're right. You had your backpack. Items in your backpack, uh-huh. Weapon card, spell card, armor.
Okay, and you kept all that stuff in a box, also separated from the game, so if you mm-hmm. wanted to play the game.
With all your hit point tokens, that's the other thing. Your hit point tokens, gold tokens, that all went in the box.
Okay. Yeah. Anyway, I think it's interesting that you know, we ran into, when we went to play the second session, we were like, well, we're going to create new characters, we're going to play a different campaign, and we just didn't have, well, we did have enough resources, but it was going to be a significant jump to maybe reducing the number of basic cards in the pool mm-hmm. for when we're actually playing. So we're going to get better equipment. We're going to fight maybe harder monsters. No, I guess not monsters because they wouldn't be taken out of the game. But you know, we would get better stuff. There'd be fewer basic blessings. Be more likely.
Oh,
to
I
get
see what you're saying.
More
because
advanced blessings.
Gotcha. Yeah, we had all the five.
You have to keep the cards.
Yeah, because
you could write them all down.
From the
yeah,
pool.
There's actually sheets to allow people to have multiple campaigns. So yeah, you can record
from the same box set.
Because there've been five decks of cards. I mean,
right.
We'd had, you know, of all basic cards, really. I mean, there was maybe a handful, five or ten at the most.
So we want to like make our original campaign easier. Let's just start up a second campaign and put it on off to the side.
Right. Exactly.
So it's more of basic cards from
basic
the
cards
set. Anyway,
I thought that was interesting. That it has some sort of effect.
Maybe
on
the intent was
balance.
Maybe the intent is that you're not supposed to run multiple campaigns.
Or you just write
box.
It down.
Yeah.
Or
yeah,
actually
right.
just to keep
well, I think both of those are true. I think that there's only room and intent for enough for six people if you buy the additional class decks.
I mean, the only thing you need to write down, though, are the... like the...
Blessings, armor, items,
non-basic
allies.
No, but the, some...
Anything basic.
Yeah,
spells.
I guess... Like, I was thinking what you can swap in and out, though. And... I mean, you can always replace the basic stuff that you lose, right?
Yeah.
That's
well,
what
I
mean,
that doesn't really help
deck.
You record. I mean, you could do like a diff, right? You could,
yeah.
And so it'd make it easier to record.
No, you can always record it. And, yeah right. But you have to like, you have to put them back in because there's a chance it could get dealt out into an adventure.
Yeah.
And eat up, you know, space for a potentially great card that goes in. Also, there could be like, you know, the best archer, you know, bow that you can get. And some other character already has it, like, so it's never going to come up again.
That's what you get for running in the same world as this other guy. This other guy got there first.
It's a world first unique item.
Right. It's like Mew, right?
Yeah.
And those epic like weapons that only one person could have in the whole game. So the other thing that I thought was interesting about the game is that the last mission we played wasn't about killing a villain. Most usually when you play a game, the object of the game is to go through all the decks, find the villain, defeat him, and trap him so that he can't go escape to someplace else. But in this last game, there was no villain. There were no henchmen. They dealt allies to the deck, and your object was to go and recruit all of the allies. And I thought that was really interesting that they've given you some alternative goals.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm interested to see what else.
Yeah, I'm curious too. So, I mean, the first one we had an adventure where we just straight out beat the boss. The second one was kind of a, it's like if you have these ups and downs, you know, in terms of like a storyline. So we had our cool off period where we're trying to get allies, we're trying to get gear, and we actually took advantage of all of that and, you know, got some gear for our characters.
Maybe they're going to ramp up the difficulty next.
Oh, yeah. I believe
right,
so.
The first one's introduction, and the second one, you know.
So like, get your gear now.
Exactly.
I mean, it's even in the flavor text saying, you know, you guys, you know, beat back the Goblin Horde, and now you're going to, you know, take a breather, and you get the sense that encroaching evil's coming, and you got to gear up and get allies.
So who wants to take a bet whether it's going to get hard enough that someone will actually die at some point?
It's possible.
I don't know. I'm still skeptical.
I think we're still so early that it...
How many adventures are there for, like, the campaign? I'm just wondering.
Six adventures, six things. So 36 adventures, 36 encounters, whatever they're called.
The one thing that I worry about the game in terms of longevity is the genericness of the locations, where... You can only go to the general market so many times. It's like, oh, for this one, we put these six locations down and doing the same thing. And then you just have the same cards where you randomly put in the cards.
Yeah. So what, Chris, not going to appear in one.
Yeah, I mean, so that's just what I'm worried for. I mean, so far it hasn't been an issue. I'm just thinking, you know, by the time we get to, you know, level or mission 17, is it like,
I don't know. Oh. I don't think we'll be there or if it does, it'll be rare because right now I think we got to think in terms of constraints of the story. We're in a town. We were fighting off goblins. We're now adventuring, and I think we're going to move out of the town.
Oh no! I'm not. That's right now. It's not an issue. I'm just thinking about, you know, will boredom set in terms of, like, you know, there's not really a story being crafted, you know, by a DM or something like that.
You could read all the flavor text on the cards and you would see all that story.
Well, no, but that's what I'm saying. You read the flavor text on the card for the 15th time, loses all flavor.
But you're going to be basically, each location is just going to be, okay, this is a location, these are the items it can give you, and then I need to...
Each adventure deck adds more locations.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
That's what I was wondering.
Yeah, but the problem is it's going to be generic. Like, oh, instead of survival 6, I'm going to need stealth 6 to close this one. I'm going to need arcane 6 to close this one.
So I think the base game has a handful of locations. And, you know, I see the same chapel come up every single time, and I'm like, I'm going to hang out in that chapel because it allows me to restore my blessings. And I love that. So I always... make a beeline for that chapel when it comes up. And so far we're in Adventure 1. So right now there's the base game plus whatever was added by Adventure 1. So you're only going to see, you know, maybe 9 locations, something like that.
Yeah.
But if every adventure adds 3 more locations,
then you can vary it up.
You're going to see more and more diversity and see the same locations less and less as you get later in the adventure.
Yeah, but I mean, are they going to be varied enough to, you know?
I don't know. We haven't seen them yet.
That was only one of my concerns in terms of longevity of replayability.
I think that's still a concern. I mean, I don't know if it just has to do with the locations. That's a very specific point. But come on, playing that game 36 times in a row, I'm not sure I would be able to do that.
We've gone through 5. I think we would have completed Adventure 1 now if we went straight through.
I think so far an adventure only goes for, you know, an hour, maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe less than an hour.
Just see, like, myself getting bored after, say, the 18th one or something. Yeah.
No, that's it's not, you know, because it doesn't, I guess, a not, there's the kind of, the story doesn't feel like it comes out enough sometimes. And so it'll be interesting to see how it kind of plays out.
Well, maybe if we started reading the flavor text more.
Well, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
One thing, but actually being involved in the story.
Yeah, I mean, and also you can feel, you know, totally disconnected from your character where it's like, okay, I'm playing,
I don't even know the name of the town we're adventuring in. I mean, I don't know anything about the world. I really don't. It's like a lot of it's just numbers right now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only thing that's cool, I find cool is that, okay, when the villain comes up, oh yeah, he has a special name. That's kind of cool. That's about as much flavor as I'm getting into with the game.
Yeah, well, I wonder because, you know, we've been talking a lot about G wants to buy the class decks because...
Oh, he did.
they add diversity to your class. They add, you know... But what you're saying is still valid, that if the core mechanics are kind of the same, is it enough to just vary up the character you're playing? You know, I do kind of the same thing every time we play. I heal people. I go through these same 3 actions. Would it be a whole fresh new experience if now I was a fighter and I was going to kill people? I don't think it'd be like totally new. Maybe it'd get me through a few more games, but I don't think it's going to push me through a whole nother campaign with a second class. So I see what you're saying.
And note, if you start a new character, you will want to do the original campaigns to get those level ups.
Or not.
Or not, because it might just make it a little bit more difficult.
Yeah.
But I think the loot mechanism, you know, even the subtle, like, slow progression that you go through, you know, you get one card maybe every time you play. That's still enough to keep me going. Like, I want to see where my character goes and how it grows.
Yeah, I think I'd be more excited if there's a threat of death.
Right. Me too. Well, and the thing is, it's kind of random. So, like, my character, I've found a lot of items for other people, but I actually haven't, I don't think I have any items that, like, are, like, not basic.
Well, I think we have tossed a few out there.
Did you keep the healing rod, or did you throw it back into the
I gave pool? It to someone else, because to recharge it, you had, like, to be a magic.
I always give all my loot away.
Robin Which knows. Is the opposite of a rogue.
Yeah. Oh, no, he's just keeping track of favors. Once we start finding, like...
But no, but I'm just saying that you can actually... I mean, so now we've played five games. I've played five with the rogue, and so I've got the bonuses that you get from doing the adventures, but from actually, like... items, like all the items that I had. Either there's one, I had magic leather armor and I needed a two to get, and I got a one. and then I did get the crossbow for Paul, and then, you know, so there's things that, you know, possibly later on down the road I could use something like that. But it's really random in terms of who gets the upgrades. So you can go a significant number of ventures without actually upgrading your deck significant.
Right. No, but I still like the fact that, you know, we even have some of the stories of people failing or that my wizard couldn't get through a single location. And that's some of the, like, stories about our game that I like.
Yeah, when you play. As long as those stories exist, that's the reason to play.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what, you know, we play games for, right?
That's right.
as long as you're having fun.
Well, I mean, it's that, too. I don't want to harp on this too much, but the added threat of death, at least for other games, it makes it so that when you start the game over, you actually are thinking about how to improve, like, your overall gameplay, you know, so that the second time you go through, you'll do it better, and you're kind of thinking about strategy more, where in this game, I feel like, since you're kind of, I mean, we haven't really met that death wall yet, I'm not really, like, trying to optimize the way I play.
Well, I think things will get difficult. We're still in the first, well, equivalent of first two adventures of the game.
I am optimistic, but I don't know, you know, that it's going to get harder. Though I will say, generally speaking, I'm not a person who seeks out great difficulty for enjoyment. Like, I look at, you know, your favorite game, FTL, and I go, that game's just too damn hard. you know, I would like it if you passed most of the time and you failed sometimes.
Well, I don't know, Chris. You did raids with me, so, I mean, those are really flipping.
I knew that I was going to fail. I went into those expecting, you know, just to lose, and I wouldn't do that every single time I played.
True.
I did that just that one time for fun, but that's...
One time. Yeah.
But yeah, in general, I don't like it things to be. I think I like things to be just hard enough that I can pass it. And yeah,
we're waiting for just
right
hard
now.
Enough.
We're not at that point. It's just too, you know. It's guaranteed that we'll pass it, and I'm hoping and I'm optimistic that it will get worse for us. But hopefully all not right. too worse.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know.
Gotta hit the sweet
time
spot.
Time to die.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. No,
if we make it to Adventure 3, and we're still have like basic weapons, I don't know. I think it'll start getting difficult.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's take a break, and when we come back, we can talk about next month.
Cool.
Final thought. Yeah. This is like the encore.
Exactly.
It's the Pathfinder encore.
We're back from our break. you just jumped in right away because I stopped it. I had paused it before you were ready. So yeah, one thing I wanted to talk about that I forgot to talk about was that I think the game might be too easy because we have five people playing. It originally was designed for four, and then you buy an add-on character pack in order to extend the capacity to six. But it feels like with five people, you have too many blessings, you have too much stuff.
Too many tools, too many options.
Get closer to the mic.
Too many tools, too many options.
Yeah. How many people did you play with the last time?
Just four.
Four.
And how did it went better?
That one was just easy.
Oh, okay.
Well, we got within eight of the end, right?
Of the non-villain mission, only because we decided to close that location.
But actually, it would have been riskier because remember, we had to find the ally in the last location, and it was untouched deck, so it would have been eight cards. So yeah,
it was risky.
In the worst case scenario, we would have just barely made it.
With less players, you don't have the diversity to defeat all the obstacles.
Yes, yeah. But also keep in mind when you're burning blessings, you're burning hit points, right? So I mean,
No. I'm thinking of like the actual challenges. Like if you have a wisdom challenge that has to be done in order to close a location, yeah. And you have a rogue and a warrior as your two players, and it's only those two.
Yeah.
Good luck.
And right. We did. I mean, there was one chest that was like a strength check for Dan, and we were like, he's like, I got a D6, and then everyone just started tossing him
because it can spawn D6 loot items that everyone can benefit from. That's why everyone was contributing.
Only got one.
Yeah,
we all contributed. And we're like, we can all share the items that we get,
and it was a basic item.
And he got one basic item.
Yeah. But the other thing is that with more players, every person can contribute a blessing once.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Whereas when you only have two, you may get one bonus.
Yeah, one extra dice.
And so not only do you have less diversity, but you have less options for boosting your character.
And you have a higher ceiling, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. And here's the other thing: it's like with multiple players, and this is how we did it before. Like, we discovered the villain, we went to all the other locations to temporarily close it out.
But that's not as much of an issue because you have less locations when you have less players.
Oh, okay. Never mind. I didn't know that.
Well, I think those are all good. Like you get more locations, so there's more to do when you have more people. But you
have the same number of turns.
Yes. You have the same number of turns.
And I think that's right now it sounds like a really good mechanic. The fact that it doesn't matter if you have one player or six players, you have 30 turns to do what you need to do.
Yeah, but this Chris's complaint before was that there's with five players, he only gets six turns, six actions at most in the adventure.
Right, so if I spend a turn, burn a turn healing, that's just
people during their turns. That's true for me.
I guess that's not such a big deal.
But it forces you to actually go through your deck a lot faster because you have to burn your exploration in order to get through everything in time. And so that's what, I mean, basically burning through decks a lot faster. It hasn't been an issue before, so maybe it will become an issue later.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to next month's game. And for next month's game, I don't know, really, I guess it's Dan's choice.
Wasteland 2.
All right. Why Wasteland 2?
Well, I don't know if anyone else here played the original Wasteland, but I spent, I don't know, 100 plus hours on it. Actually beat the original Wasteland when I was 10 years old, 11, 12.
So it was a PC game?
It was a PC game. No, it was an Apple IIe game in monochrome graphics. Actually, there was one, I think, at 16 graphics. Color game. But yeah, we played it where it was black and green. And you have floppy, 5 1/4 floppy disks that we played on. And so it was similar to Ultima 4 in terms of movement.
Or 3.
Either of them had the same. Yeah. Or 5, actually. Ultimas 3 through 5 are the same. But combat was different. Combat was like Bard's Tale, where you actually didn't see anything. You saw a portrait of the enemy, and then you just had your characters.
Options.
Yeah, so you had your group of rangers, and then you fought. And so now they've upgraded it to Fallout 2. we are not talking Fallout 3 or anything. It's basically Fallout 2 level of in terms of the graphics that are in it. So you have your squad and you move around. And
Turn-based
mm-hmm. combat. It's a square-based system. And so, and it's very similar to Fallout 2 in terms of the difficulty also. And your character creation, you can create up to four rangers. And it's old school character creation where you have a list of 50 skills or whatever, it's like 30 skills, and you have a limited number of skill points, and you have to diversify your team because each character may get 3 skills. And you, in order to succeed, you really have to have everything. And so everyone becomes specialists in the game at different things, and there's all kinds of different weapons. And ammo is very scarce, so you can't have everyone use the same weapon, so you basically specialize everyone. So it ends up being, it's a real throwback, and I've probably put in about 35 hours already. Okay.
That's the warning for the game, is that you want to dedicate as much time as you can to it as HP. Early.
Yeah.
Because 10 hours alone will be spent on character creation.
Right. I probably spent, and it's not easy. Like, I'm like, oh, I'll just use the party that they give you that you can just use, like, pre-made, and then go through. And I just watched everyone die. I made it an hour into the game, and I think every single one of my guys was dead. And then I spent about an hour and a half on character creation and went through it. And it's a real min-maxer game.
Okay.
So... If you spend the time on character creation and then you have to have a plan for upgrades as you're going through for more specializing, and there's no hand holding in it at all. Like, you make a wrong turn and you don't save your game, you will die. It's like I encountered some ferocious bunnies, dead. This was the basic mission. I went and just made a wrong turn. Wasn't ready yet, and...
You didn't get the holy hand grenade from the...
I didn't get the holy hand grenade, and, you know, the bunnies jumped on me, and I just died. And I was like, oh, crap. And there's an autosave function, and there's a quick save function, so, you know, you're not going to lose more than an hour.
Damn. one quick question, though. When you do your weapon proficiencies, and this is something I didn't want to go into because I wasn't sure if I was going to get burned on it, because I know in, like, Fallout, I got burned on... Like, one of the skills is energy weapons, right?
Yeah.
So if you put your skills in, and I know if you put your skill in rifles, you got a rifle. You put your skill in pistols, you got a pistol.
Yep.
If you put an energy weapon, do you actually start off with an energy weapon?
Yes.
Oh, not a great one, I assume.
Spoiler.
No, you start out with the basic entry level weapon with whatever you do.
Okay.
So if you do a heavy weapon, the thing is, it's... You know, it's not that great. And it's also like Fallout 2 in the aspect where when you start playing the game, your chance to hit everything, even when you're skilled, is like 45%. And so you're burning half your ammo. And so you have one guy that's a melee guy, which I have one, and then he's the only guy. And then everyone else is just burning through ammo, and they hit half the time. And the random number generator, I swear, is biased.
Oh, well, okay. 50%, well, it's 45.
It's kind of like XCOM when you have 97% chance to hit and you miss 3 times in a row.
It happens.
Yeah, it does.
Happens a lot.
XCOM, it happens
we
a lot.
We should save it for the
not,
session.
It's yeah, not quite as bad as XCOM, but every once in a while you... But then that's not true because every once in a while you have a streak of like insanely good luck. So
So
it actually is better than XCOM in that sense. And that it's like a true random number generator as opposed to a ridiculously biased random number generator.
You still don't trust XCOM's random number generating.
I do not trust XCOM. I missed too many 95% plus shots for it to ever even be a real random number generator.
All right, so that's next month's game. Now we'll move on to our segment, which we call Bonus HP. And I'll just go around and see if anyone has anything to say. Because we didn't talk about what people might want to talk about. Is there anyone? No?
I've been playing Europa Universalis 4.
You picked that up on the Paradox
Yeah,
tab?
Well, the first thing that I did is I watched 10 hours of how to play Europa Universalis 4. And then, I mean, I really like Crusader Kings, and that's why I wanted to get into Europa Universalis.
Uh-huh.
The Gamers with the Jobs guys kind of inspired me to try to pick it up. I did all this... You know, research, and now I'm playing my first game, and I still feel like a lot of the game is hidden behind, you know, like I can't figure out what's going on, but I've gotten it to the point where I think I am controlling things enough to like slightly guide my destiny a little bit.
Right.
So I mean, I've only played about 3 or 4 hours, but I mean, I'm enjoying it. It's hard. I don't feel like, you know, I feel like I have a very weak hand at doing things. Like if I want to accomplish a goal, I think my chances are pretty low. I mean,
right.
But I can manipulate things a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Two games I'm interested in, one that's old and one that's going to be coming out soon. What was that? Modern Warfare Red Dragon? It's
Call of Duty?
It's like a
Far Cry, right? I'm thinking of a different one. I'm thinking Blood Dragon.
I remember. You search Steam for it. It's this military simulator. It gives you like infantry, what they're armed with.
War Game Red Dragon.
And it's just like, it's my kind of level of obsessive extra details in a game. And you plan these huge troop movements, sea battles, missiles. It's overwhelmingly, you know, information overload. And it sounds like a really cool game. It was on sale recently. I haven't bought it yet, but I keep on coming back to it and watching it and going, oh my, I got to get back to that one. And the other one I'm looking forward to is Sid Meier's
Yonder.
Beyond Earth.
The civilization in space.
They said it's not Alpha Centauri. It's not Civilization. I don't know. I've been watching gameplay videos. It looks cool, but I will probably pick it up on a sale coming up soon.
I'm not playing anything but Wasteland.
Yeah, I've not really played anything for the last 2 months except for Minecraft.
Correction. I just started playing Disney Infinity 2.0.
Yeah, I got all of the Disney Infinity 2.0 stuff that's been released except for discs, because discs take forever to collect. I'll probably just buy those on eBay. But I haven't really been playing it yet.
You can just buy it all in the PC version for $125.
I know, but I like little figures, and Caroline plays with the little figures more than she plays with the actual video game. But anyway. Yeah, well, I've been playing.
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, go ahead.
I've been playing lots of Super Smash Brothers.
Oh, really?
Kids are playing now.
Wait, is that the new one?
I've been playing.
No, not yet.
No, I haven't been playing the new one. I've been playing the GameCube. I've been playing Brawl and Melee. Well, the GameCube and Wii U one.
This is good to know, actually.
Yeah.
Because we used to play that a lot.
Yeah.
Not Chris and not Glorious.
So I busted out the GameCube controllers.
I played it a fair bit, but not anything like you guys.
So I have four of them. And so my two boys have been playing a lot. And so I've been playing against them and getting my Super Smash Bros. Skills back.
So yeah. At 10 HP Con, then you can
bust out the
Smash Brothers.
Yeah. Do you have a Wii U?
Oh, not Wii U. I meant just the Wii.
The Wii, yeah, that's Brawl.
Yeah, it's Brawl and Melee.
Melee is a GameCube. What?
Wii U is the one that's not out yet.
Oh, yeah, but I'm saying if he has a Wii U, are you planning on getting Smash Brothers?
I don't have the Wii U, but I'm just playing the last two.
Those are the two really, really good ones.
Yeah, and you can use the GameCube controllers on both of them. So
that's how we play.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, you can't use the Wii controller. It's just miserable. But... that's actually been a lot of fun.
You know, the Wii U is getting a adapter to let you play with the GameCube controllers.
Oh my god!
Just for Smash Brothers.
Yeah, pretty much. But I mean, just because they're so people like them so much.
They're great controllers.
Well, when they're from a system that uses controllers to a magic wand.
They're only good in comparison to the other controllers that they have, which
right.
are terrible for playing that kind of
yes.
game. So, I mean, because I would prefer the Xbox controller over the GameCube. I mean, if I really had to pick. I don't know.
I got the Xbox. I think they're pretty similar, the two of them.
They are. I agree.
I mean,
they're okay. not.
I am actively playing 4 free-to-play games. All of which I've given money to.
Oh. I can't... I haven't bought anything or really played anything. Just because I don't have enough time. I have so many things in my backlog. My backlog grows like 5 times faster than my played game thing. So there's no point in buying anything new.
Yeah, I can't play on like console or PC. I play on mobile. That's only the gaming I get done.
But you're still putting money into it.
Not that much money.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap up now and play some more Pathfinder. Because it's still early. So that's our episode number 21. Goodbye from FinHP.